Hey everyone, Chad Cemetery is back, as is Jonathan Watkins. I'm your host, Deanna Chapman, which is a thing I seem to forget to say frequently, so we're going to start doing that here. But Jonathan, first off, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, you know. I work from home, so I guess this self-isolation thing hasn't been too bad, but no, I'm doing well.
Same here. I was like, okay, so I'm just not going to go to the movies or to the library, you know?
Yeah.
I'll walk around the neighborhood to get some fresh air. But before we dive into discussing Stephen King's 1996 novel, The Regulators, I quickly want to ask you about the twin novel, Desperation. Did you end up reading that one as well, or was this something that you didn't really know was a twin thing?
No, I did. I mean, I was in college when they both came out, like the same week or whatever.
Okay.
And I read Desperation when it came out. I did not read The Regulators though. So I don't remember why. I don't know if it was, I've never been a huge fan of the Bachman stuff.
Okay.
I really like Long Walk, which I think a lot of people like.
Yeah.
And I remember Running Man being kind of enjoyable, but like, I didn't like Thinner, and I didn't really like Road Work, I think, was one of the other ones.
Yeah.
And so maybe that was part of it. I don't know. But for whatever reason, I didn't read it. So I read Desperation when it came out. I haven't read it since. I did remember quite a bit about it, but I did do a bit of, I did some Wikipedia and research and whatnot on it, just so I could kind of remember like the characters and all that kind of stuff. Because I knew there was some continuation or some parallels. I didn't realize there were as many as there were.
Yeah.
That was kind of interesting. This was one of the few King books like I really didn't know anything about going in. I haven't read everything he's written, but I typically know at least the story.
You've heard, because of all the adaptations and everything like that, it's like it's kind
exactly.
of hard not to know what some of the stories are about.
Yeah. So that's like when you sent the list out, this one kind of interested me because I'd never read it and I didn't really know what it was about. So that's not as common these days
yeah.
with books. So that seemed like an interesting thing to tackle.
Yeah, and because you had already read Desperation, I imagine, even just getting a refresh, you're like, oh, okay, so you understand that this is sort of a parallel Earth, and these characters are going by the same name, but not necessarily the same age or anything like that. Their
yeah.
careers are a little different, and really, the Bachman stuff does seem to be hit or miss for me as well. I like certain things.
Mm-hmm.
A little more than others. You know, I read the Bachman books that includes Rage. So
mm-hmm.
it was one of those things where after reading that book in particular, I was like, wow, that was very doom and gloom. And, you know, I know that most of King's stuff is, but that felt even more brutal for some reason. And this
yeah.
was one of the books that was found after Bachman's quote-unquote death,
mm-hmm.
you know? So this and Blaze are the two Bachman books that come after the author's supposed death. And it was interesting because I didn't like this one quite as much as Desperation, honestly. And I think it's because of some of the changes that this parallel Earth made. And it was so much all at once. It felt like this one was a little shorter than Desperation, but overall, with as many characters as they have, it's one of those things where sometimes his stories with ensemble casts can get
mm-hmm.
a little overwhelming to try and keep track of. And because I read Desperation and The Regulators back to back so quickly, I was like, okay, hold on. Yes, Johnny Maranville's still a writer, and it's just he's a children's book writer, which seems very odd.
Yeah, but it said he had written an adult novel, right?
I think so, yeah.
Did that have anything to do with Desperation? So what kind of books did he write in Desperation? I couldn't remember. Did he write like horror novels or mysteries, or was he more like a Stephen King kind of character, I guess?
It felt like he was kind of a Stephen King kind of character, but when we
yeah.
meet him in Desperation, he's going to be working on a nonfiction novel. And there's a jab in
okay.
there at John Steinbeck, and he debates calling his book Travels with Harley instead of Travels with Charlie. So,
oh, I kind of remember this. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so you have this sort of area where he's at a crossroads with his writing, and it's like he's
mm-hmm.
a best-selling author, but he wants to do nonfiction instead of fiction. So it was funny in this, they were like, oh, he writes children's books. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
And then David is an adult with children who are named after his parents from Desperation, which...
Oh, that's interesting. So he was the kid in Desperation, right?
Yeah, he was the main kid in Desperation. And in this, it's like he's gone so quickly. You're like, oh, okay. Well, you just kind of killed off my favorite character from the previous book.
Yeah, see, that was what was kind of confusing me when I was reading it. Because I remembered Tack. Like, I remembered that was the villain.
Yeah.
And that he took over, like, he took over the cop, I guess, in Desperation. Who's a who's a character in this, but he's a, he's still a cop, but he's a, I guess he's an ex-cop. And obviously he's not a bad guy. In this one, or well, at least not in the, he's not Tack, I guess. And then what was I going to say? Oh, so the Seth kid, the main kid in this one, Seth, the one that's, I don't know how far you want me to get into that. I'm sorry, but just Seth, I couldn't remember. I was thinking in my mind, he was the kid in Desperation. And then when I did my research, I was like, oh no, that's not right.
Yeah.
But I didn't catch that it was the grown up. In this book. So that's interesting.
Yeah, it was a little confusing at first because I was like, okay, they give you in the beginning of the book, like before the story even starts, they give you a map of the streets and where everyone's house is. And I kept kind of flipping back to that. And I was like, okay, all of these people were in Desperation. A few of them weren't. And because there's so much chaos at the beginning, it's even just hard to keep track of who you lose in the first 100 pages, especially because you're like, oh, okay, all right, they're gone. Okay, they're gone. And this guy's kind of the same character, but then Tack takes on, you know, the body of a child instead of the bodies of adults, like in Desperation. So you're kind of like, okay, clearly there's no real set rule for Tack because this is a parallel earth, and I feel like the story just kind of tried to do a little too much. And I feel like with Desperation you at least had a little more time to get to know the characters before they were dead.
Well, you had 300 more pages. Didn't you had like almost like 300 more pages. I think it's a much longer book, isn't it?
I think my copy was only about 75 to 100 pages longer, but maybe that's just because it was the mass market paperback, but maybe the hardcovers had a bigger difference.
Maybe so. I could just be wrong, but I know what you're saying, though. I remember there just being a lot more story to Desperation. This kind of actually reminded me of, like, The Mist.
Okay.
Just with the way everybody was kind of together. And then in another sense, even though this book comes later, and I don't know if you've read Under the Dome.
Not yet.
But this had some similarities to that as well. Okay. But Under the Dome obviously takes place over a longer amount of time. That
more
is
than
a
one
much
day.
Longer, yeah, that is a much longer book. So you get to know those characters a little better. But I even felt like in The Mist, which is a novella, like, you know, those characters are a lot more distinguished than they. I just couldn't figure out who was who in this, and they all had like really common names, like they were David and Johnny and Steve. So like the only ones that really stood out were the ones that had a little more obscure names. Like, wasn't one like Cammy, or something like that? And yeah, so like, but even then, I still couldn't really figure out who was who. And then sometimes I couldn't even figure out like if I was reading about a kid or an adult, because I got so many of the characters mixed up. There was that one thing towards the end where the woman kept talking about wanting to go upstairs with David, I guess. I don't remember, but it, I don't know. At first I thought it was a mother-son thing, and I was confused about the sexual nature of what she was thinking, but I'm still not. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think it was one of those things where Tack had taken over Seth, maybe, and was trying to get with Seth's aunt, basically, great aunt, whatever she was. But
maybe, yeah, maybe that's what, maybe I'm mixing some stuff up. Yeah, because she tells the story. Yeah,
it is very confusing.
Yeah,
because you have all of these houses and you're kind of trying to go back to the maps and be like, okay, this person lives with this person. But then there's also a lot of teenagers in this at the beginning. And that's when everything starts. And you're like, wait, okay, are these more teenagers? Are these adults? And
that's what I'm talking about.
Seth and David's two or three children were the only like smaller kids. And then the kid that kept coming over and like took something from Seth, and that family ended up moving out. And it was very confusing because you had former residents that they were talking about and current residents. And you're like, okay, wait, are these people still here? Are these people not still here? And I don't want to say that I don't like books with a lot of characters, because I really enjoyed reading it, But when you have to do so much work to keep track of all of the characters, you really need the story to keep your attention enough to where maybe that doesn't matter as much. Did you feel like the story did that for you overall?
I don't know. I mean, it started off a lot more interesting than what it became. Like, I think I didn't realize, because like I said, I didn't know what it was going to become. And it just kind of became like a siege narrative, I guess, where, you know, they're stuck in those couple of houses and they're trying to figure out how to get out of there. And then at one point, I think, which this confused me too, it took me a few pages to realize this is what he had done, but I guess the surrounding area around the neighborhood became the Nevada desert.
Yeah. And you're just like, wait, wasn't this a little more woodsy or something? Because they were...
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Because they kept talking about going in the woods.
Yeah.
And then at one point he said, Tack makes a comment about how they couldn't escape now because he had turned it into the Nevada desert.
Yeah.
And... Or some desert.
All of a sudden, they had no cover, basically, when they went into the woods.
Yes. I think there's some interesting things here. He plays around with the idea of a kid's imagination. You know, like the people that are shooting at them are from a cartoon or a comic book series. And, you know, stuff like that's kind of fun. I think there's some interesting ideas here. But, like, there's definitely a difference in the way King writes and the way he writes as Bachman. And I feel like if King's writing this, well, it's probably longer, but I think the characters gel better. I think we have a better sense of time and space, which was something that was lacking in this. Like you said, you had to go back and check the map if you wanted to try to figure out where you were in the story. And like, that's not a positive for me.
No.
when I'm reading, I thought it was okay. I mean, it was definitely, for me, it was lesser King, Bachman, whatever you want to call it. But it definitely had some interesting ideas. Do you like Tack, though? See, Tack was that's a big problem for me in the story, because I just don't really ever completely get what he can and can't do.
Yeah, I think we learn a little more about how he inhabits bodies and moves from body to body in this, and how you have to have someone who is strong enough to keep the entity inside of them. And given that Seth is a kid, you're kind of like, okay, I guess because the kid is sort of easy to manipulate, but also healthy, that's one thing. But then when it tries to take over Cammy's body, it just completely destroys her. So you're kind of like, okay, it seems like it's this red thing floating around, and you see it in that sort of big showdown in the end with Cammy and Seth and his aunt. And you get a little more information, I think, than you do in Desperation, but there's still a lot of unknowns about the entity.
Absolutely.
Where did it come from? What are its motivations? You still don't really get those answers. Mm-hmm. And the fact that the vans come from Seth's imagination and the MotoCop show, it's like, okay, there's definitely a kid-like element to what's going on in the Regulators versus what's happening in Desperation. And that was a nice change of pace, because you're kind of like, okay, this is getting a little ridiculous and over the top with how these vans are being portrayed and these shooters. It's like there's a very fictional element to it, but it's very real what is happening to all of these characters. And the story, I think it holds up a little for me, just because you get this connection to everything that is happening as sort of this element of Seth's mind mixed with what Tack wants to destroy. Mm-hmm. And even though you don't really get any reason for all of this destruction, you're kind of like, okay, well, you know, kids don't always have a reason for doing what they do. So
that's true.
You're willing to let a little bit of the story elements slide in this, but the fact that you do have to try so hard to keep up with, okay, who is who? What house are we at? Who's dead now? And what color van is coming at you? It's a lot to take in. And there is this element of, like you said, Bachman books, where everything is just so much more grim. In Desperation, you could feel all of the hope that David had, because David knew how to figure this out. But in this, it's just like a scramble until the end.
That's true, yeah. And it almost, at least with this one, I mean, it's been a while since I've read any other Bachman books. Like, even though King is not afraid to delve into, like, sex, sexual things and whatnot, this one felt a lot more aggressive and a little more, like, there's a, I mean, there's probably like 30 or 40 pages of this book, like dedicated to like Seth defecating, which is just odd to read.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, I get it ends up actually being part of how they kind of stop Tack, but I don't know. It was really odd. It was, which a few years from this, he writes Dreamcatcher, which like that movie is basically like just aliens and defecation. Like that's that entire book. But I kind of feel like he was, I don't know, that was some weird like obsession of his at this point in his writing life. But it just feels a little grimier, a little more like more like kind of like a grindhouse film version of a Stephen King novel, I guess, would be the best way to put it. It's also interesting you brought up It, though, because that's one problem I also have with It is, and It's a much better book than this, but like, I never really get a sense of what exactly it is Pennywise can and can't do.
Okay.
Especially in the movies, but even in the book, it's, which is crazy because that book's like 1,200 pages, but even in the book, it's never really completely defined. So for some reason, it's okay in that book, though, I guess because everything else works so well. But in this, maybe it was just more noticeable because it was a little bit of a weaker story. And Tic Tac kind of feels like a kind of like a weaker version of Pennywise, I guess, like that evil entity.
Yeah, I think with Pennywise, because, you know, it comes around every 27 years, that gives you at least some semblance of, hey, there are guidelines for how this thing works. And the fact that typically only children can see it, you know, when the kids are being tormented, none of the adults can see anything that's going on. But because they come back, when Pennywise comes back, you feel like, okay, this is their battle. They have to end it so they can still see Pennywise as adults. But other than that, you really don't have any guidelines for what's going on. But I feel like It is a little more structured with its characters and Pennywise and the relationship between the two. Whereas with this, you don't have too many people in the regulators who have a relationship with Tack other than Seth and the people living in Seth's house.
Oh, yeah, that's a very good point. Yes, that's true.
In Desperation, it's much more out in the open. They understand that this thing has taken over Cully. They understand that it takes over David's mother by the end of Desperation. And, you know, obviously, I'll probably spoil both books at this point because our Desperation episode aired last week. But really, these two novels, you kind of do have to read both of them to get sort of the bigger picture of what Tack is capable of doing, even though you still don't get any exact answers.
Yeah, it seems like he's just kind of like, I'm trying to think of what that fairy tale character is. It's not an imp, I don't think, but he's like a mischief maker, right? He just wants chaos and mischief, and you know, he wants, you know, people to kill each other, and he, you know, have sex, and you know, he's very much like just on that kind of, I guess, that kind of wavelength where he just wants to create all this kind of destruction and chaos. He doesn't really seem to have much more of a purpose, which is fine. I mean, you know, you can definitely have like horror novels and horror movies that have characters like that. I don't know. And maybe, like you said, maybe if there was some connection with the characters, maybe if we had more connection with the characters that it sounds like we did in Desperation, this would have been a lot more interesting. But like, you don't even have, like, they're not even really connected to Seth or Audrey either, because they haven't even seen them in like a year because they haven't, you know, they haven't left the house.
Yeah.
Because I thought that was interesting, too, when you're reading those journal entries throughout, and they're from the year before.
Yeah, I did want to talk to you about the little tidbits at the end of each chapter. I think the journals were the most effective, but everything else just kind of felt weird. And I guess we can kind of talk a little more about the ending in specific, because once everything goes down, all of these people have died, not all of them, but a lot of people have died on this one street. You finally have fire trucks and police officers coming, and you know, the firefighters are putting out the fire. The police officers are just like, what on earth is going on? They don't know who to point their gun at. They don't know who to, you know, leave alone and treat as a victim. And then you get this sort of epilogue where it's just this random letter, and you find out that, you know, Seth and his aunt are kind of ghosts at this mental institution, and or something, and it's super weird. You're just like, okay, but like, what does that even have anything to do with literally anything, you know, there's...
Yeah, I had to go read about that because I didn't really get that at all. And I guess there was something in the book where, I mean, I did remember this, where Audrey kept, it's Audrey, right? Isn't that her name?
Yeah.
She kept going to like this kind of mental safe place.
Uh-huh.
And it was, I guess, a prairie.
Yeah, like a prairie, so, a meadow, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what I read, that we're supposed to get, that that's where their ghosts are, or like in this meadow. But it did seem like it was like an inn or something. It was some kind of, I didn't get that it was a mental institution. I thought it was like a touristy thing, but maybe it was. That part really confused me.
Well, it says mental sanctuary, so I guess they just mean where she went in her head, not an actual institution. Yes. That is my bad. Gotcha. But yeah, it felt like it was like a hotel or something, and it was just like, this is super weird. And King's endings have been a big topic of discussion on this podcast because those really seem to be hit or miss. And I read that letter, and it was a long letter too. And then you have the one with Alan Symes. And it was like 40 pages of this letter this dude was writing. And I was like, oh my goodness, we could have cut so many things out of this book.
Well, and what else was interesting about that, I believe the stuff at the end though was like 84, right? So that's what also confused me, because the year didn't make any sense, because the events in the book took place in 96 and 95. So the whole thing was weird.
Yeah, I didn't catch the date. I can look real quick, but if that's the case, that's even weirder, because it's like, did they travel back in time to be ghosts?
I have it right here. No, June 19th, 1986. Yeah. So it was like 10 years before the events in the book took place.
Yeah, so that's even weirder, because then you have this element of time travel with ghosts.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, maybe that was when they took Seth in or something. I'm not really sure, but that is super weird. And that's a very nice catch on your part. I probably didn't even read the date. I was like, I'm almost done. Gotta crank this out.
I guess I've never been on here to talk about Stephen King endings. I think it's both, like, I mean, he's kind of made it a joke himself. I mean, if you've seen Dr. Sleep, he's actually in a scene where he basically trolls himself.
Uh-huh.
It's really bizarre. But I think most of his endings are fine. I think there's a couple that stand out that are not great, It being probably one of them for a lot of people. But I think for the most part, like, I think he does okay. And I think this one, I mean, it's just not that interesting getting to that point. But I do think the ending might be one of the stronger parts of this book.
Oh, interesting. I was just so baffled by that epilogue. I think everything before that worked great.
Well, I guess I'm talking about pre-epilogue. I guess I'm not really counting the epilogue as the ending, because that's a little separate. But like, the, you know, just how they defeat Tack, even though they kind of get lucky. But I did kind of like the way Seth actually was helping them. I found the Seth character pretty interesting. Probably not developed enough, but like, there was some things about him that were kind of cool. And I don't know. I kind of liked the ending, where the way they, because I didn't really understand how they were going to possibly beat this character.
Right.
Or beat Tack. But I thought they handled it in a pretty interesting way. But it's just kind of a mediocre book up to that point. So maybe, you know, maybe I wasn't as expecting as much. Whereas in a much better book, like The Stand or something, maybe when it gets to the ending, you're just a little underwhelmed.
Yeah.
Because of that.
It's like, a lot happened, but they didn't do a whole lot of build up to that final ending, because we didn't spend as much time with Seth as you would think we would have, knowing that it was going to come down to this showdown. And I did like that showdown element. And then you sort of hit the epilogue and it just totally changes gears and you're like, oh, all right, ghosts.
Yeah, I would have left the epilogue out, I think.
Yeah.
It was almost like, after I read that, I was like, I wish I hadn't read that.
Yeah, and that's what I mean by endings. It's like, Stephen King can nail an ending, but then add an epilogue that you're like, huh?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's definitely justified, like what people say, but I do think a lot of people that haven't even read more than two of his books just kind of say that as like, that's, you know, accepted, that he just writes terrible endings. And it's like, he's a really good writer. Like, he's written some really good endings.
Oh, yeah. I think, like, Pet Sematary is one of my favorite endings from him.
Oh, yeah. Pet Sematary's got a great ending, in the book especially. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's not like I think every single ending is bad. It's just, having read so many of these books in such a short time span, it's something that I've increasingly noticed when
he does
something weird in, like, the epilogue. And I agree with you that the ending pre-epilogue was pretty satisfying, even though you know all of these tragic events had to unfold before that. But you're like, okay, they figured out a way to at least get Tack off of this street. And while they can't go back to having a normal life by any means, they can start to move forward.
Yeah. I also, like, I felt like I just, the Seth character, like, just the being a parent, like, and just being, like, kind of weird about, like, dirt and stuff. I just, like, the description of how, like, just uncared for he was because of the situation and just how gross the house was and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I just felt so bad for him. And I was even thinking about that in the ending where, like, they basically she had to give him, you know, the X-lax, so... And I was just thinking about the logistics of them going and getting him, and he's like in the bathroom, and they even, like, King even writes about it, you know, like the underoos are hanging off his foot, and it's really tragic, like just the whole thing. And then what it ends up happening to him and his aunts, even, you know, even worse. So, yeah, it's pretty interesting. But then, like you said, that epilogue comes and you're just like, what was that?
Yeah, it's just one of those things. But I think, you know, we've covered a good amount of the story and what went on. Do you have any favorite moments from the book that sort of stood out to you as better than, you know, mediocre?
The whole Moto Cops thing, or Motor Cops or whatever it was, I thought that was really interesting. I just liked all the kids stuff. Like, I liked that the reason these worlds were being created, and I really liked, I can't remember the guy they kind of focus on towards the end. I don't remember if it was like a Steve or a Johnny, or I can't remember what his name was.
It might have been Johnny Maranville.
Oh, yeah, it probably was, because he was the cop, right?
He was the writer. Collie was the cop.
That's right. Sorry. Yeah, it probably was Johnny. But he starts kind of figuring everything out.
Yeah.
And there's like that one bit where he talks about, I can't remember what it is they see. They see some kind of creature. I don't think it's the cat. I don't think it's the buzzard either. It's something else. But the way he describes it, he's like, you know, it looks like a cat, but, or it looks like a tiger or whatever it's supposed to be, but it looks like a kid's version of, like a kid's drawing.
Yeah.
So then you start thinking about that, like all the stuff that they're seeing is like, you know, basically what a kid would like create on his own. I think that was the most interesting thing to me. Like, I could just visually... That was just really interesting. And obviously, this has never been adapted into anything. Apparently, in 2014, the rights got bought up for a TV series that never happened.
Yeah, that seems to be a thing that happens with Stephen King a lot. It's like, there's lots of talk about stuff, but whether or not we'll actually see it, which it's funny that this one didn't get an adaptation because Desperation did.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember I watched that when that came out. That was, which I guess that was later, right? That's probably like 2000s or something.
Yeah, I think so.
But, Ron Perlman, I think plays Tack in that, or plays the cop.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that was definitely like my favorite part was just all that. Like, this isn't a detective story, but like the detective stories that I really like are the ones where they're actually doing like detection, where you can actually see like
the wheels turning,
how they figure everything out. I liked that aspect that he brought to this story, and I thought that was interesting. That would probably be my moment that I enjoyed the most.
Yeah, and because Johnny's the one who goes over there and tries to help Seth at the end, and he's sort of the one who kind of stumbles out and just sits down and is like, nah, I'm not going to talk to the cops right now. It's just one of those things where it makes that ending a little less tense. You kind of get this little moment of levity. But I do agree with you that when you can see their wheels turning and see the process for how they're figuring things out, that is what makes the story interesting. But I did like that moment when they go into the woods and everything suddenly changes and they realize how exposed they are. And they're trying to not leave anyone behind, but they kind of have to make the choice between surviving and dealing with these dead people already. So you have this moment where you don't really know what's going to happen to this group of people who went out into the woods. Mm-hmm. And it just suddenly changed the entire landscape. It was a nice story tactic that shows you a little more of what Tack can do without any explanation as to why it can do that.
Is that where they find the guy like stapled to the cactus?
Was it the homeless guy, I think? I know they mentioned seeing like this guy's cart and stuff.
Yeah, he was like, or he was attached to a cactus. Yeah, that was really interesting. I did like that bit. That was probably some of the better writing.
Yeah, so that scene sort of stood out to me, and you're just kind of like, oh man, this is ruthless. And the whole book is that way. But in that moment, you're kind of like, oh, we have no idea the extent of Tak's powers. And early on, you have that moment where Mary has been cheating on her husband, comes home, doesn't have any underwear on, and people start to notice. But there's too much going on for anyone to really say anything about it or do anything about it. And, you know, it's like people are kind of like, well, that's quite the show there. And you kind of just have to move on with it because everyone who's standing outside is in danger. And I'd like that while he lingered on it a little too long, maybe it wasn't something that was like, oh my goodness, we need to stop everything that's happening.
Yeah, no, and I mean, and that's real life, right? I mean, if you were in a weird situation like this or whatever the realistic version of this would be, I mean, you just don't really have a, you don't have a chance to like grieve or think about the implications of what, you know, her not having underwear on might mean, or where was she coming from, or whatever it is. You know, you just gotta, you're just at that point, you're just trying to save everybody. No, I agree. I think that's interesting. I think that's what I said. I think at the beginning, I think there's some stuff there, but then it just kind of, I think once it gets to where they're holed up in the houses, I think it just kind of, it kind of, it loses a lot of momentum.
Yeah.
Maybe in like a movie or a TV show, this would work a little better because you could actually develop the characters a little more, especially like if you did a TV show. But in a 375 page book or whatever this was, it just, I don't know. It's weird. Well, now I'm kind of saying that is pretty short for him.
Yeah.
But it does still kind of feel like it feels longer than that almost.
It does.
Especially once they get to the houses.
And I like that you bring up the potential for it being a TV show because I think something like a 8-episode limited series for this would work really well because you have these groups of people who are doing things simultaneously, but you can't necessarily see all of that happening. So you could take 8 episodes to tell this 24 to 36 hour story.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's the other thing. It's about a day, right? I mean, that kept confusing me because of the journal entries, obviously were like from the previous year, but I think it's like right around July 4th.
Yeah. Desperation was the same way. It was like a little over a day, I think, from what you can tell based on when things happened sort of off page, because Kali had taken people before we even meet him in Desperation. And in this, you don't really have as much of that. You obviously have all of the events happening with Seth and Tak that Audrey kind of outlines for us later with the journal and with, you know, just these sort of flashback moments to, oh, hey, you know, this family ended up moving out and somebody else moved in. And so you get a sense that things have been a little weird for a long time, but really it all culminated into this big final moment that lasted, you know, roughly 24 hours.
Yeah. 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 That was interesting. I remember that just going back to Desperation. I know that's not about Desperation, but one thing I always remember from Desperation is at the very beginning, when he pulls over the couple, I don't remember who they are versus who they are in this book, but, and he finds the weed in the trunk.
Oh yeah. You know Peter and Mary Jackson.
Yeah. Peter and Mary. But at that point, he's just kind of telling him like, yeah, just move the license plate. And like, I always remember thought that was really creepy. Cause I'm like, if he didn't find the joint, like, was he just going to let them go?
Yeah.
Like, you know, and I found like that is stuck in my head for, you know, 24 years, you know? So, and I don't think anything from this book is going to stick in my head like that did, you know, so I'm pretty sure I like Desperation quite a bit more, even though I haven't read it in a while.
Yeah.
It definitely stuck in my head. So, and also The Green Mile came out right around this too, right? So this was a really weird kind of offshoot book of his. This was one of his strongest, I guess, writing periods.
Yeah. Cause I think The Green Mile and these two books all came out in 96.
Yeah.
So it was a busy, busy year for him. And the fact that these two came out on the same day, too, it's just like, that's a lot of King at once.
And then, like you said, the next year he continues The Dark Tower. And so, I mean, he was, you know, there was a lot going on here. So this is definitely a weird one to be put in the middle of all that, I guess. But it's not terrible.
Yeah. So what would you end up rating this one?
I don't know. I think I gave it like 3 stars on Goodreads. Like
same.
Yeah, it's like the worst, like, I don't know, the worst. I mean, there is worse King than this.
Yes.
But even like the worst King that I've read is still better than a lot of people's best books. But it's really hard not to judge it based on his other works.
Yeah.
As far as Bachman goes, I'm almost positive I like this better than Thinner.
Okay.
I just really didn't like Thinner. That's one of my least favorite books of his. But I don't think it was quite as good as like The Long Walk or probably, I don't remember Road Work that well. Those were the two that I kept thinking about when I was reading this, though, because they felt like these were kind of in the same vein as those, but maybe not quite as good.
Yeah, I think Road Work was about a guy who was sort of in this construction path and was going to lose his home and
yes.
I think lost his job and stuff. And
yes.
It's certainly not the most memorable of the Bachman stories.
Yeah.
I think The Long Walk definitely sort of takes the cake for at least the Bachman books collection. Obviously, Rage has a certain kind of impact, but because it's not published anymore,
yeah.
You can't really expect everyone to know the details.
And yeah, then Running Man is just kind of his sci-fi. Running Man's really fun, though.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's good, but it's a really fun read. And as much as I enjoy that movie, I kind of wish they had just actually made the book, because I think that would have been a better movie.
Yeah, the movie was pretty wonky.
Yeah.
But do you have any final thoughts about The Regulators overall here? I know it was certainly one that felt like a longer read than it was, for sure.
Yeah, actually, but I will say, though, I read it like in a couple days, which is not as common for me. Although right now that I'm stuck in my house a little more often, I'm not going out and picking my daughter up from school and stuff because she's home with me.
Yeah.
I do have more time to read, so that probably factored in, but I was able to read it pretty quickly. But like I said, I just don't think this one's going to really stick with me. I mean, I think a week from now, once I've read another book or two or started something else, I think I'll have pretty much forgotten about this. But it's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're reading, there's no reason not to read it if you want to read King and Bachman. And he definitely, like I said, he's written worse, for sure.
Yeah.
I think this probably falls somewhere like in the middle of his stuff.
I would agree with that because I've only read one or two things from him that I honestly did not like at all. One being the Tommyknockers, for sure. And I was just like,
yes.
Oh, yeah, that didn't sit well with me at all. And it was super long. So
you don't even have to know that he was on cocaine.
Yeah.
Writing that book. Like, you don't. That's pretty clear. That's not funny, though. I mean, I know he had a really bad addiction problem. I didn't mean that as a joke.
No, I know what you mean. And he's been very open about that over the years, too.
He has, definitely. No, yeah, I haven't read Tommyknockers. I read Tommyknockers around when the TV movie was on. So I guess that was in the 90s. And yeah, I don't remember liking that one very much.
Yeah, I didn't like the book or the adaptation all that much.
Yeah.
But then there's, you know, a bunch of short story collections that he has that sometimes can be hit or miss because it's like, okay, some collections clearly have a theme to them. Like different seasons and the Bachman books with the novellas. It's like you kind of get the gist of what's going on in those collections. But then there's others where it's just such a hodgepodge of stories. I'm like, I don't know how I feel about this, really.
Yeah. Well, and it's really interesting for me because the first Stephen King book I read all the way through, I had tried to read a couple when I was younger because like you've talked about, my mom had all the books and when I was growing up. And I read Dark Half. That was the first one I read all the way through,
okay.
Which is really interesting when you go back and read Bachman after that, because I think that book very much is about him parting ways with Richard Bachman.
Yeah.
So I always go back, and that's just interesting. That was the first one I ever read, but all the way through at least. But one thing I've noticed reading a bunch of King books, and especially I'm sure you're noticing this reading them in order, is like he's just fighting with himself so much in a lot of these books.
Yeah.
And it's really, and like we were talking about, like he had the whole era where he was, you know, struggling with drug issues and those books feel very different than the stuff that came after. And then of course you haven't gotten to this yet, I guess, but I don't remember when did he have his accident? Well, that was right around this time, right? It was like 99, I think.
Yeah, I think it was late 90s.
Yeah, it's really interesting reading the books after that. Dreamcatcher might even be like his first book after that.
Okay. Yeah, that's something I'll have to keep an eye out for and sort of figure out the timeline.
Yeah, you can like kind of see like the eras of his life. And also, he's been very open. He's not private.
Right.
Like, he's been very open about his whole life. So that's interesting, too. Like, I don't think I know a lot about most of the authors I read. Whereas I feel like I'm almost related to him because he's told us so much.
Yeah.
But sorry, I didn't mean to get off on that tangent. But yeah, he's a really interesting guy. Even if he's not your favorite author, he's a really interesting dude. I've always admired that about him.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Jonathan, I think that's a good place to wrap this mm-hmm. up. Thank you so much for coming on to talk about The Regulators today.
Yeah.
Quickly, before we go, I want to let you know about our Patreon. You can support us for $1 a month. That'll get you a thank you on the show. $2 a month will get you a Chat Cemetery sticker. I don't have too many left, so if you want to support, that's a good way to do so. And you get a little reward out of it. You can also follow us on social media at Chat Cemetery. We are on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And as always, thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your day.